using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 24th of May, year of our Lord, 2021, day 436 of America Held Hostage. Today in the second hour, we're going to have an interview with a state representative in Nevada. Two state representatives last week refused to wear the mask or to show their vaccine passports. And they've been banned. And so as soon as I saw that, we're going to have Annie Black on today in the second hour. Stay with us. We'll begin with a death toll, the one that you're not going to see, constantly displayed at MSNBC or at CNN, and that is the death toll that's been reported in the wake of injections. Yes, they have a lot of different ways of calculating death tolls for COVID. If you die within 30 days of getting a positive PCR test that's been magnified by a factor of a trillion, that's what the cycle threshold of 40 is, then you died from COVID. Doesn't matter if you drove your motorcycle in the wall. And that's I'm not exaggerating. That was an actual case we had. When called on it, the coroner in Texas said, well, it could have been COVID. Could have been a contributing factor to that. So they cooked the books. As I pointed out last week, they're starting to cook the books even more. They've lowered the cycle threshold for people who are vaccinated. And they're keeping it at an absurd rate that they said doesn't work. The inventor of the test said that. Fauci even said it. Cycle threshold of 40 is nonsense. So they're keeping a high cycle threshold for people who are not vaccinated. You are to be quarantined and taken away if you fail that ridiculous test, even if you have no symptoms. But if you were very, very sick, and you test positive at a cycle threshold that is higher than what they have dropped it to, and they drop it by a factor of 4,000, 4,000 times less sensitive, then even if you're very, very sick and you don't go to the hospital, you're not going to be counted. It's absolutely amazing. I was talking to someone at church yesterday who was sick. Gotten a message a couple of weeks ago, and he missed a couple of weeks that he had been taken to the hospital, difficulty breathing and so forth. So I saw him. I said, so did you have COVID? He said, no, I had pneumonia, and they gave me the test, but it didn't test positive. But he said, I had blood clots in my lung. And I said, did you take the vaccine? And he said, no, but the doctor, the emergency room, asked me if I had taken the vaccine. She saw the blood clots in my lung. Have you had the vaccine? He said, no. She said, don't get it. That's just one of the red flags that you might think. But here's another one. Now we have 4,647 deaths reported into the CDC's own database that we're not supposed to look at. That's a sacred database. Unfortunately for them, it's been public for 30-some-odd years. And now we can see, because it is public, that more people have died since they started putting out these massive vaccines middle of January than in the previous 22 years combined of reported vaccine deaths into the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS. But what is even more troubling than that, in my opinion, is that they point out on vaccine impact, said, take note, because these totals are broken down. So they show the totals from 1999 to 2020. 4,571 cases, but now we have 4,647 cases just from the middle of January until now. And they said, as these are broken down when you query the database, take note that for this 22-year period, over 50% of the recorded deaths following vaccination were infants and toddlers under the age of 3. Because this is the next targeted demographic to receive the experimental shots. They're coming after them, even though they are the most susceptible, based on their own data. The ones who have been harmed by this the most are the young kids, and they're not slowing things down. As a matter of fact, since they just started doing it for teenagers, this article, which surprisingly was actually linked on the Drudge Report from Daily Mail, CDC investigating heart problems in teenagers and young adults after the Moderna or Pfizer vaccines. The condition that we've talked about many times being related to these vaccines, myocarditis, which is an inflammation of the heart, muscle. Problems have been occurring 4 days after the second dose has been given with teenagers. And we've had, and I've mentioned, some specific instances of teenagers who are perfectly healthy who died of heart disease, sudden heart attack, just a couple of days afterwards. But we're not going to slow down. This is Operation Warp Speed, and we got to keep going fast. This is rushing roulette, is what it is. We cannot slow down. It's got to go. Trump said so. Biden said so. Republicans say so. Democrats say so. Full speed ahead. We're not going to even pause for a moment. Remember when it was going through the so-called trial period that lasted for 2 months, not 2 years, as is required previously for all vaccines? And even that, the World Health Organization had a meeting where they were talking to scientists, virologists, all over the world, and they would say, you know, 2 years just isn't long enough. So what do? We cut it to 2 months. 2 months. So as they were talking about that, as they were going through the head fake of actually doing a test, which it wasn't a test, you had some individual reports of somebody dying, and immediately they stopped the test. Oh, well, you know, we need to stop and investigate what's going on. Oh, no problem. We'll continue. They don't even pause anymore. They don't even bother to investigate. It's just, it's nothing there. We already know it's nothing there. These things are perfectly safe. No need to look any further. So why are they doing a test? Why are they testing this and for supposedly testing this for very young children? It's just a head fake. All this stuff. It's just propaganda. Dozens of cases have been reported to the agency in the recent week. They said then in the body of this, it's just a small number of teens. Well, it's dozens. You're not going to stop the trial for anything. And not only that, not only are we seeing teens getting heart attacks, dropping dead, we also see that in Dallas, as reported by Adam Dick at ronpaulinstitute.org, he said, I drove by this site, this outdoor vaccination site, and I saw a whole bunch of school buses. I thought, are they using school buses to bring people in? He investigated. They're using school buses to bring students in. Not only do we not care about young kids dying of heart disease, getting myocarditis, we don't care about that. We're going to bus them in as well. They have zero risk, according to the CDC's own data about the pandemic. And this is one of the things that's a big red flag about the pandemic issue. The fact that it looks not like a pandemic where you have illnesses and deaths reported spread out equally over every age group. That's what you always see in other pandemics. I mean, have you ever seen a situation where you've got, let's say with smallpox, it only affects the elderly, right? No. It affected everybody. George Washington got smallpox when he was very young, survived, then had immunity to it. If it's a real issue, you're going to see this pretty much equally distributed across the spectrum. They like to talk about 1918 flu. Well, that was distributed equally over every age group with two exceptions. Those 80 and above, much higher. Those 1-year-old and younger, much higher. So babies and elderly are always more susceptible. But other than that, it's equally distributed. This is not the case with this. This looks like, as I've said many times, a relabeling of the actuarial table. life expectancy. As you get 55 and up, they started seeing the cases go up just like you would expect to see with normal life expectancy. So the guy says, so I'm looking at this and I think, no way, schools could not be busing in students to the site so that can be given an experimental coronavirus vaccine shots. Well, it turns out that was exactly what was happening. He said, just last week, I critiqued government efforts to give the experimental coronavirus vaccines to children. May 13th, quote, state and local governments should refuse to participate in providing experimental coronavirus vaccines to children. The parents should refuse to do this. State government has become part of this. As I pointed out before, it was kind of surprising that somebody at a lower level of OSHA was honest and said, employers, if you require vaccines as a condition of work, you're going to have liability if somebody has an adverse effect. And now they've pulled that back from the higher-ups. They pulled their new guidance, which said employers may be liable for any adverse reactions if they mandate employees to take the vaccines as a condition of employment. This is what it originally said. If you require your employees to be vaccinated as a condition of employment, in other words, for work-related reasons, then any adverse reaction to COVID-19 vaccine is work-related. The adverse reaction is recordable if it is a new case under, and they cite, regulation 29 CFR 1904.6 and meets one or more of the general recording criteria, and they quote another law. Now they've changed it. Excuse me. They said OSHA does not wish to have any appearance of discouraging workers from receiving the COVID-19 vaccination. So some higher-ups told them, hey, change that. So, because they don't want to discourage you, as a result, OSHA will not enforce recording requirements that they just quoted there to require any employers to record worker side effects from the vaccines through May of 2022. There you go. Just wipe it off. You don't have to record. When has OSHA ever been that laissez-faire about things? No, that's okay. Don't worry about it. You did something at work, caused people harm. Not a problem. We don't care about that. We don't want to discourage people from working. As Chris Minahan of Information Liberation points out, OSHA was created to protect workers' rights. That's what they said. Instead, it's trampling all over them on behalf of big pharmaceutical companies. Most employers, however, are shying away from mandating coronavirus vaccines, reports MSN.com. They quote Houston Methodist CEO, that's a hospital, Mark Boom. He said, we must lead by example and get vaccinated ourselves. And then he put out a mandate for his other employees, and it was very effective. He got 98%, he intimidated 98% of the people at the Houston hospital to get vaccinated. That's 26,000 employees altogether. And more than 3,000 got the shot after he told them to, right after he told them to. And the problem is they've got a couple of people who are reluctant holdouts out of the 98% of the people who, of the 26,000, 98%, some of the people who refused to do it. One of them, interestingly enough, was the director of corporate risk and insurance. Why do you think he would refuse to do this? Because he understands risk. He understands risk. He's risk averse. He's the director of risk and is like, I'm not doing that. So they fired him. So several employees are now vowing to skip the shot. They're rallying around Jennifer Bridges, a nurse who has worked in the hospital's coronavirus unit. She worked in the coronavirus unit and she doesn't want the shot. Think about that. She thinks the shot is worse than the coronavirus. She's threatening to sue also. Bridges says she's willingly submitted to, quote, every vaccine known to man, unquote, but believes the coronavirus vaccines need to be studied further. It's like you're being forced to do this, whether you like it or not. Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. And that's exactly why you should refuse. Not only does this seem incredibly suspicious, highly risky behavior, but we know for a fact that we're setting a very dangerous precedent. Even, as I've said before, even if I believed, and I certainly don't, if I believe their propaganda that these things are 100% safe and 100% effective, or as close to it as they are willing to say without getting laughed off the stage. They should be laughed off for the numbers that they're putting out there now because they never did a test. But even if I believed it was absolutely 100% safe and 100% effective, I would still refuse it if it was mandated to me, because we must not allow the precedent to be set that third-party individuals, whether they are big corporations or government or the two of them working together, can tell me what I have to put in my body. I absolutely refuse that. And I've stood in the past for people who wanted to take medication that, or drugs that I didn't want to take, because it's not the community's business. It's not the village's business. We don't want to have communal decisions made that ignore the welfare and the decisions of the individual. It's just that simple. We are in the process, by ignoring the rule of law and letting these people dictate this stuff to us, and what they are dictating to us, we are setting incredibly dangerous precedents that will not be removed very easily. And we have to stand up. That's why I'm interested in talking to Annie Black, one of the two legislators in Nevada who stood up to this, and they suffered the consequences. Look, there's always going to be consequences if you stand up against something. We have to be willing to take those consequences. So they said it's, she said, it's like you're being forced to do this. They talk about Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis, MSN. They make this equivalent to the two, saying they barred state agencies from mandating vaccines or issuing vaccine passports that would track whether or not people get shots. Well, Florida's law is very different from what happened in Texas, because Florida went after private employers. What Texas did, I believe, if Houston Methodist Hospital is getting state money, they should be banned by this Texas state legislation. That remains to be seen. They may be completely private. I don't know. Usually hospitals are getting some kind of state money. But the problem is that the legislation that is banning these vaccine passports is contingent on the emergency use status. Once the FDA caves like OSHA just did, it just rubber stamps this, then it's going to come back with a vengeance. Miami-based Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings, which announced plans to require all passengers and crews to be fully vaccinated, is now locked in negotiations with DeSantis after the governor banned businesses from requiring proof of vaccinations. Now, that's not exactly right, of course, because this is coming from Microsoft News. They're making this sound like the edict from DeSantis. And they would always talk about these edicts that we've suffered under for the last 436 days as if they were law. They were simply naked tyranny from unelected bureaucrats and governors who were flush with cash and wanted to keep this thing going. But in this particular case, this is actually a law that DeSantis signed it, but it's actually a law from the legislature. It's not a governmental edict, but they make it appear that way, that this is just his preference, and so he's fighting with the cruise lines. No, this is the way it's supposed to be. We're not supposed to have the CDC writing law, quote-unquote, or the local health bureaucrats writing law, or living by the dictates of a governor, a dictator. This is actually a law signed by the governor. So they said the cruise giant insists that its plan is legal. Well, actually not, because they passed a law. And it has threatened to pull its business from Florida if the state does not allow it to move forward. And they're referencing the CDC because, you know, the CDC, a private organization that's been given government powers like the Federal Reserve, is superior, of course, to your elected representatives. This is the thing I never understood about the entire Stop the Steal stuff. Why, after sitting there doing nothing, not organizing any rallies, Trump doing nothing for 300-plus days, why is it then that we suddenly summon everybody to rallies to defend this do-nothing president, who actually, he didn't do nothing, he did the wrong thing? Why are we talking about election corruption if we're going to be ruled by unelected bureaucrats? What difference does it make? If you're going to have a president who turns over the rule of the country to a dictator, Fauci, and leaves him there even after the election, what difference does an election make? What's the point of having Trump or anybody else, even if they're a good legislator? What's the point of an election if we're going to be ruled by dictates of people who are not elected? Employers say they're struggling in the absence of national policies. This is the whole point. This is why Microsoft News is doing this, because they want to push for federal rules, federal mandates. We can't have a patchwork of regulation. We need to have something that's going to do what I want to do and get shoved down the throats of everyone across the country, regardless of whether there is any authority for the federal government to do it or not. Even if the federal government is prohibited from doing it, we have to do this. So they say, we need to have national policies, clear legal parallels. Federal officials reiterated this month, however, that they have no intention of requiring vaccine passports, let alone mandating vaccination. When I criticized President Trump last year for pushing the Operation Warp Speed, I had so many Republicans pushing back on me saying, well, here's the difference. Trump is not going to mandate the vaccines, and Biden will. And I said, no, Trump is not going to mandate the vaccines, and Biden isn't going to do it either. Because we've had since March of last year, and they put it out three different times, the New England Journal of Medicine alone, three different times. And all the rest of them are talking about the fact we don't want to have a law to do this. We want it done through corporate coercion because we don't want to have any due process challenges. And there isn't going to be any federal mandate on this, at least until they take off the emergency use authorization. Things may change at that point in time. But I don't think it's going to be any different for Biden than it would have been for Trump, frankly. The U.S. has no proof of vaccination system, and the Biden administration refuses to support such a system of verification, said Lawrence Gostin, Georgetown University's Institute for National and Global Health Law. Global Health Law. That's what we're talking about here. So they don't go through a process of representation and legislators. This ambiguity serves no one, and it leaves the public more confused about how to keep themselves safe. So they're continuing to push it. They may do it eventually. They talked to a Stanford University law and medicine professor, David Studdert. He co-wrote a March 31st essay for the New England Journal of Medicine. I said many times, this is from the very beginning, they've been talking about how they're going to coerce vaccines through corporations. They addressed the policy then, and then, of course, later on in June, and then they repeated that study, the op-ed piece, again in October, saying they did not want to have any due process challenges. They talked about the ethical considerations of vaccine passports, because, see, this is not about medicine, it's not about science, and it certainly isn't about ethics. This is about taking away your freedom and your dignity. Whatever you want to call them, passport-like requirements are happening, he said. They're going to get them one way or the other. Oregon, meanwhile, as we had Kate Brown say that she's going to continue to require masking or vaccines. Now, on Friday, she released, followed the Republican Governor DeWine, who came up with his $1 million lottery. Each week, some lucky survivor of a vaccine could possibly win $1 million. And so now she's got a lottery. Lottery prizes ranging from $10,000 to $1 million. Just call it the rushing roulette. Warp speed roulette. We're rushing into this. Roll the dice, Oregon. No, actually, they call it take your shot, Oregon. It's rushing roulette. Only vaccinated people will be entered into the new lottery. So there you go. Sue them. Get into the judicial lottery. You might win more than $1 million. By suing Kate Brown. Who knows? She's shut down a lot of businesses. They should be the ones suing her. She said, this is not meant to be a bribe. It's an incentive. It's corruption. After Trump funds these big pharmaceutical companies, creates nine new billionaires, two of the new billionaires, $4 billion each. After all that, after they get liability from any injury that they cause to people, after the government delivers the vaccines, even has the National Guard putting the shots into their arms, as Admiral Brett Giroir said last fall. Now they're going to financially incentivize the lab rats to do this. Yeah, it's an incentive. No, it is a bribe. And I guess what they should have is a slogan, the choice is simple. You can get vaccinated and become a millionaire, or you can stay in your house, arrested under house arrest, and be an untouchable in our new caste system that they're creating. Oregon is requiring vaccination proof or masks in churches as well as businesses and employees. Let me tell you, any church that is this lacking in discernment or this subservient to government pressure, if they don't really understand what's happening here, go somewhere else. You need to find some Christians who are going to stand with you. You need to have some people who really understand what's going on. The CDC director, Rochelle Walensky, reiterated what I've been saying for the last year, what the New England Journal of Medicine said for the last year, as to why they're not going to mandate this from the Biden administration. I said that wasn't going to happen. We are not counting on vaccine mandates at all. That's going to be locally driven, not federally driven. It'll be corporate driven. Rand Paul is refusing to get vaccinated. He says he's already had COVID. He said, until they show me the evidence that people who have already had the infection are dying in large numbers or being hospitalized or getting very sick, I just made my own personal decision that I'm not getting vaccinated because I've already had the disease and I have natural immunity. He tested positive. He was also the first senator to test positive back in March of 2020. He did not develop any notable symptoms. He was not hospitalized. Basically, he had a PCR test. He was PCR positive. In a free country, he said, you would think that people would honor the idea that each individual would get to make the medical decision, that it wouldn't be Big Brother coming to tell me what I have to do. That's right. And in a free country, I'd expect a libertarian senator to say that this applies to everybody, not just somebody who's tested positive with a cycle threshold of 40 PCR tests. That's what I would expect, Rand. You stand for my informed consent as well. This is a broad principle. It's not to be restricted to people who have tested positive on this garbage test. You don't get to tell me what I put in my body. You don't get to dictate medicine from your chair in Washington. Any of you, senators, directors of the NIH, or any of this stuff. One person, Amy Susskind, tweeted back, this buffoonery is the main reason we're still unnecessarily losing hundreds of Americans each day. Does she support Planned Parenthood? Yeah. How many hundreds of people are being murdered every day? Amy, you support that? We know that's happening. We don't know that hundreds of people are dying with this virus every day. That is a statistical game, just like the game they're playing in terms of a cycle threshold of 28 for people who have been vaccinated, a cycle threshold of 40 for people who haven't been vaccinated. They have skewed the results. They have lied about this from the inception of all of this, skewing it to get exactly the answer they want. It's absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense. YouTube removes, this is the way it's put in the Las Vegas Review-Journal, a seller of vaccine disinformation. Who are they talking about? The truth about vaccines in their YouTube channel. This is run by Ty and Charlene Bollinger. They also have a truth about cancer website, which is still up. And so the Las Vegas Review Journal, a seller of disinformation, by the way, is what they are. Yeah, anybody that they disagree with, you are a seller of disinformation. Well, that's what they do. A seller of propaganda. They said, well, the problem is they had a video up that had 1.5 million views with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. They had 75,000 subscribers. Said they've got another channel, and you can go there and also see videos that, quote, sow distrust and fear about vaccines. You should distrust the vaccines that have not been tested. You should fear them, not the virus that is out there. And finally, CNN says the 2021 vaccination map looks like the 2020 election map. In other words, this has gone along political lines. The strange thing about that to me is the fact that the GOP base cannot connect the dots between Trump, the vaccine, and the pandemic. They don't want the lockdown. They don't want the vaccine, but they still support the guy who gave it to us. We'll be right back. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Wuhan Wu flu. We've had some developments with this, and of course there was also a back and forth between Rand Paul and Fauci over that. Rand Paul accused him directly now of having been involved in that. And if you remember, as Zero Hedge points out, Fauci furiously backpedaled over the origins of the pandemic, and what we can assume was an effort to redirect attention away from his own culpability and involvement and funding, exactly what many people believe happened there. I think there's a virus. I don't think there's a pandemic. It's very clear. There's not a pandemic. If you have to be told there's a pandemic, constantly beaten over the head by it, it's not a pandemic. There is a virus. There's been a lot of federally incentivized malpractice withholding very cheap, very effective therapeutics from people until they die. There's been an inflation of the statistics, a misattribution of statistics, but there's not a pandemic. But what is surprising to me, just like I said before we went to break, the fact that the vaccination rates and the resistance to vaccines looks very much like the election map, because this is a political pandemic. And I said that from the beginning. I said it's not really, I think this is not a disease. I think this is being modeled for us by the globalists through China. And they're going to have something that they can try to hang their hat on, but it's not a pandemic. Nevertheless, these headlines curated from last year, May 5th of 2020, from CNN. Anthony Fauci just crushed Donald Trump's theory on the origin of the coronavirus. Another one. From May 5th, Dr. Fauci again dismisses the Wuhan lab as a source of coronavirus. And he did it just recently with Rand Paul. But then immediately, as they point out, he changed his tune that afternoon when he did an interview. And he said, as he's being asked questions from PolitiFact, asked if he was still confident that COVID-19 developed naturally. He responded, no, actually. What? You saw that back and forth between him and Rand Paul. He says, I'm not convinced about that. I think we should continue to investigate what went on in China until we continue to find out, to the best of our ability, what has happened. He says it could have been something else other than, you know, coming from bat soup. Could have been something else. We need to find that out. That's the reason I said I'm perfectly in favor of any investigation that looks into the origin of the virus. Well, what do we know about it? We know that Fauci funded coronavirus bat research at UNC Chapel Hill as well as there. But why is it surfacing again now? Why do they care as the pandemic is dying down? Why is it important to do that? And I think that there's a couple of things that we should be concerned about. You know, when we look at what happened, they point out in the story from Zero Hedge what I've talked about continuously. In 2014, the Obama administration temporarily suspended federal gain-of-function research on bat coronaviruses. It was actually Congress that did it. And they did it anyway. They did it anyway. Everybody was furious when Francis Collins released the research from UNC Chapel Hill because they said that was supposed to be stopped. Well, I decided I would continue it anyway. And he did it for about a half dozen different projects. And the gain-of-function research was supposed to stop because of so many accidents and their biosafety level 3 and 4 labs. And so they did it just ignoring what the government told them to do. Not only that, but they did it with foreign research so they could avoid any shutdown of that. They gave $666,000, 666, to EcoHealth. That was the and they funded the Wuhan virus through this guy, giving him $666,000. They said they did it with a partnership with universities and institutions, but of course it also involved the Batwoman Zingli, according to the Washington Post. Oh, so you can believe it because it's coming from the Washington Post. Now we have new research that says, well, we knew before. There were details that we had some details before, but now we got more details. We did know before from the State Department. They issued it during the final days of the Trump administration. They said several researchers at the Wuhan lab became sick in autumn of 2019 with symptoms that were consistent with both COVID-19 and common seasonal illness. The disclosure of the number of researchers now, there's now more details. They say, well, it's three of them. And the timing, the specific timing of the illness and their hospital visits come on the eve of the World Health Organization looking at this. The Wuhan lab has refused to share raw data, just like Canada. Canada, as they arrested the pastor, and his lawyer said, I'd like to see your data that you've been using for the last 14 months to justify this lockdown and prohibition of basic human rights. Oh, no, we don't have the data. We can't get that together. We can't show that to you for the trial. We've seen the same thing from these climate frauds. Oh, they never have the data that they can show us. But I've got a study here that I did. I just can't show you the data that backs it up. Same thing about the Wuhan lab. They refuse to share raw data, safety logs, lab records. But again, Peter Daszak, the guy that was paid $666,000 per year by Fauci's NIH to collaborate with a Wuhan lab. We do know that. Former U.S. State Department official David Asher, who led a task force on the origins of COVID-19, told a Hudson Institute seminar in March that he doubted the lab workers were infected with ordinary flu. Quote, I'm very doubtful that three people in highly protected circumstances in a level 3 lab working on coronaviruses would all get sick with influenza that put them in the hospital or in severe conditions all in the same week. All in the same week. And it didn't have anything to do with the research they were doing with coronaviruses. He added the researchers who fell ill may represent the first known cluster of cases. So there you go. There's a coincidence theory that's being put out there to say that was just a coincidence. But what do we do with this? Will they use this to stop gain-of-function research being conducted by Fauci and these other Nazi war criminals that we have working for us, the extension of Operation Paperclip? We have become the Nazis. We're now doing experiments without people being informed, without their informed consent. We're now doing experiments, the most dangerous injections that have ever come up. We're doing that to people. We're continuing the gain-of-function research, trying to take deadly pathogens, make them more deadly, more easily spread. Nobody is talking about stopping that. That's the amazing thing to me. That's the thing that is so infuriating to me, is that Rand Paul and everybody else who's talking about this only want to use this for partisan political gain. They don't want to fix the problem. How many times have we seen this in politics? And I've seen it with the pro-life movement. I've seen it with the gun rights movement. A lot of these organizations do not want to stop it. They're just like big pharmaceutical companies who say, we don't want to cure the disease. We want to continue treating the chronic condition. And you've got politicians who want a chronic condition that they can use, that they can milk, that they can fundraise off of, that they can get elected on. They want these things to continue. They don't want to stop the gain of function. They don't want to jail Fauci. He could be jailed just for the financial improprieties and ignoring the orders. But they're not going to do any of that. Instead, they're going to use this for partisan attacks. And the Democrats will come back and say, look at how crazy those Republicans are, and so forth. They'll just divide the country more. That's all they will do with this. Zero Hedge article, how hard will Biden press for a probe of Wuhan, knowing that a lab leak will require a political response? This is the other aspect of this. Republicans will use this to push their anti-China agenda. And I think that we should be concerned about China's aggression, about its hegemony, about its fascism. They are not communists as much as they are fascist, not only economically with the merger of corporations and government, but fascist in terms of their rabid nationalism and hegemony that they're trying to exercise everywhere. They are fascist in every sense of the word. They just use the beard of communism because that sounds cool to the intellectuals of the left. But what will they do about this? Is Biden going to actually call this out? Well, he's not, for a couple of reasons. He doesn't want to burn his bridges with Fauci and the left. So they're going to nail it down on the other side. But it's also because, the author here of One River Asset Management said, the geopolitical consequences of this disaster, having been a laboratory accident, would be so vast that it would be difficult to imagine. Would nations hold China to account? If so, how? With war reparations? How would international debts be treated? Equity, all these different things. These barely scratch the surface. And yet, if they do not press hard, how will Western governments retain their already diminished credibility when it comes to national security? Democrats don't care about credibility when it comes to national security. And when you look at what is happening, the same questions could be asked. Will they press for a probe of Fauci in the NIH? No, they won't. These guys can they can special order baby parts, fresh, not frozen, from Planned Parenthood, and they never suffer any consequences. They never have an investigation. They never go to a prison. They always cover for them. As a matter of fact, they try to jail or put out of business the people who expose it. Let's take a quick look at headline news. Biden will drop the student loan forgiveness from next week's budget. We had about 42 million Americans who have student loans, and what he was pushing for, some of the people in the party were pushing for, was $10,000 worth of loan forgiveness up to each. So we're talking about up to $420 billion. That is more than half of the Pentagon's budget. I mean, we're talking about a big chunk of money. I know we're talking about several trillion dollars with all these other programs, and our eyes tend to glaze over now with anything that doesn't start with a T. But the Pentagon's budget is about $750, $780 billion, somewhere in that range. We're talking about a program that would have been $420 billion, so it's not going to go. Biden is saying the idea that you get to go to Penn and you're paying a total of $70,000 a year and the public should pay for that, I don't agree with it. Well, good. But the left is furious with him. The progressives, Elizabeth Warren, Occasional Cortex, Chuck Schumer, they want this to happen, actually not 10,000, but up to 50,000. You want to talk about privilege? That's what we're talking about. A GOP congressman forgot to cast a proxy vote that would have stopped the Democrats' $2 billion security spending bill to investigate the so-called insurrection. Now, how did that happen? He forgot to vote? There's a California congressman, Ken Calvert, is the one who forgot. He was given a proxy vote from Texas GOP Representative John Carter. Carter evidently had something better to do than to go to Congress and vote. I don't know what the issue was, why he could, maybe had a legitimate reason. But the thing that is strange about this is that the California Republican, Calvert, had already voted some proxy votes for him. It's not like he forgot that he had a proxy vote from Carter. But the California Republican just forgot to do it. Actually, it's a preceding vote. He had, preceding the final vote, he had already voted against it. And then when it came up to the final vote, he forgot. I just forgot. Sorry. And that would have been what was needed to kill it. There was also another Republican, Daniel Webster. I guess he was messing with the devil. The devil and Daniel Webster. Now, Daniel Webster says he is opposed in principle to using proxy voting, and he was unable to vote in person. So either one of these guys could have stopped this. But they just don't do it. And for the longest time, Vince Agnelli is pointing out how the Republicans in Virginia, for example, betrayed Republican voters or Republican Party. They simply don't bother to even put up enough candidates or recruit candidates if they were to win their race to have a majority in the House. Just turning it over to the Democrats because they want them to take it to the next level. Jared and Ivanka made up to $640 million in the White House. Isn't that nice? Jared and Ivanka, somewhere between $172 million and $640 million in outside income while working at the White House, reports citizensforethics.org. Both of them announced that they would not take a salary while working in government in an attempt to shut down any concerns about nepotism. Because, you know, we know that Jared and Ivanka were not in the White House simply because they're related to Donald. It was their outstanding qualifications that they were selected for, right? While their supporters saw this as a public sacrifice, it wasn't, actually. The massive amount of money that they made on the side undercuts the argument, as the government salaries would have been less than 1% of what they made on this outside income that they said they were going to forego. It would have been if they had done that. One major factor in their outside profits came from Ivanka Trump's ownership stake in the Trump Hotel in D.C., just blocks from the White House, a locus of influence peddling during the Trump administration. All told, Ivanka made more than $13 million from that hotel alone since 2017. It dropped from about $4 million a year between 2017 and 19 to about $1.5 million last year, mostly due to the pandemic. And it's one of the reasons why when Trump wrote the rules for bailouts, he made an exception. First, it was just going to be small businesses that had, you know, X number of employees and below. But then they said, well, you know, it could be a big chain. It could be a big chain as long as they don't have more than X number of employees at a particular location. They can still get the money. That's the people who got the money. In 2018, Ivanka announced that she was shutting down her namesake brand, later filed a disclosure with the government that all operations of the business had ceased July 31st, 2018. But Citizens for Ethics discovered that she still made up to $1 million from it in 2019, despite the fact that she claimed that it no longer existed. In what would become the defining scandal of her time in office in October 2018, Ivanka's brand won 16 new trademarks from the Chinese government, including for voting machines. Maybe this is why they focus on one voting machine company exclusively, because this is a problem that extends across all electronic voting. But maybe it's the one they don't have a deal with. Trump administration's implementation of the Opportunity Zones program in 2018 apparently violated conflict of interest in the process. There was a company that Jared owned a significant financial stake in called Cadre, which offers investment vehicles under the Opportunity Zones program. When Ivanka and Jared entered the administration, Jared's stake in Cadre was valued between $5 and $25 million. The value would rise to between $25 and $50 million. Jared originally failed to disclose his ownership in Cadre, despite the fact that the top White House ethics official determined at one point that it was reasonably necessary for him to divest from Cadre in order to do his job at the White House. He never would, never did. So first he didn't disclose it when it came out, and the White House ethics official said, you need to get rid of that. He never did. Jared and Ivanka should never have been allowed to work in the White House. Well, they wouldn't have if Trump was serious about the campaign issues that he campaigned on, because they're not on board with any of that stuff. She's no different from Chelsea Clinton. Went same schools, BFFs is what they are. The Department of Justice reversed decades of precedent to grant President Trump's wish to have his children work in the White House while taking on enormous responsibilities that they were unqualified to carry out, debasing their position with constant ethics scandals. They likely made hundreds of millions of dollars from questionable sources. All that was waved off by the same nepotism that got them their jobs, writes Citizens for Ethics. She's also now, as we have the chief financial officer of the Trump Organization, Weisselberg, being investigated. She made a very strange claim. She said, under oath, that she wasn't sure what role Alan Weisselberg played in the Trump Organization. And so she's claiming in the deposition that she doesn't know what Alan Weisselberg does, even though he is the highest-ranking, longest-tenured official at the Trump Organization that is not named Trump. This would be roughly as absurd as President Biden claiming not to know what role Janet Yellen holds within his administration. Now, that I could believe because of his senility. But I think she's not senile. I think she's simply lying. This goes to show how eagerly the Trump family will throw Weisselberg under the bus the minute he is criminally indicted in New York, writes the Palmer Report. And I agree with him. Meanwhile, Tim Kaine, remember him? Senator, still senator from Virginia. He was the vice presidential running mate of Hillary. He is now saying that Catholic teaching on abortion is equivalent to Sharia law. He wrote an essay for a far-left National Catholic Reporter. He suggested that abortion is not a matter of life and death, but merely of norms that govern human sexuality. He said, why would government require that Catholic sexuality doctrine or Sharia law or Orthodox Jewish rules about Sabbath be followed by everybody? He says abortion has nothing to do with defending human life. That's his, that's not what he said, but it's the implication of it. Because he said, quote, a decision by U.S. bishops to elevate issues of human sexuality, however important, above all others, seems contrary to the gospel. It's not a Christian or Catholic issue. We're talking about the lives of innocent babies here. And because we do not care about that, we're now ready to vaccinate our youngest children with a radical, untested genetic code injection. One individual replied to that, said, we're all called to oppose abortion because we acknowledge the human being's right to life, the unique human identity of each living, developing embryo, and the horrendous violence of the procedure itself. Now, I recorded yesterday responses to the questions that people had sent. Ask me anything, kind of thing. And I got some really strange questions, and so I did my best to try to answer them. Got a lot of questions about UFOs, Planet X, the moon landing, a lot of stuff like that I don't typically talk about. Alex, who I do talk about. And I do talk about Alex because the policies matter. The policies matter. The policies of Trump matter. These people are still influencing people. They're still misdirecting people. And that's what I do. I oppose what I think is wrong and misinformation. But in terms of the UFO stuff, I had somebody write me about UFOs and the Bible and so forth. But I mentioned briefly, but not as much, the aspect that this could all be a psyop. And they put it very well in this article on Zero Hedge. Is the Pentagon's UFO psyop fueling Russia and China war risk? A risk of going to war with them. They say there's reasons to be skeptical. After decades of stonewalling, suddenly the American military seems to be giving credence to claims of UFO invading Earth. And when I said when I was talking about it, I talked about a book that I had read years ago. By the way, the program will air on Wednesday as we're traveling to Occupy Peace in New York. We're going to be speaking at Gerald Celente's Freedom Festival up there for Memorial Day on Saturday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern Time. And if you want to join it, it'll be streamed live on OccupyPeace.com. But so I've pre-recorded some things that we'll be playing in the morning. I'll still be doing the KHNC radio show live each day. But So when I was talking about that, I said, yeah, you know, that always is a concern. This is going to be some kind of a psyop. They put it this way. They said, were the leaks authorized by the Pentagon, spooks? To stoke the public imagination of visitors from space, the Pentagon doesn't actually say what it believes the UFOs are, only that they are authentic. Why does the phenomenon of UFOs only seem to be associated with the American military? Yeah, good question. Why is it that only the American military seems privy to such strange encounters? Why not the Russian or Chinese military, which would be a comparable detection? They have comparable detection technology to the Americans, but they don't seem to have made any public disclosures on alien encounters. If you believe that life forms from light years away have a fixation solely on the United States, that's intergalactic American exceptionalism at its worst. So they go on to say that while these people who are reporting it in the military believe in good faith that they have seen something, they believe that it's being misused by the military for their own agenda. And that's always an issue. But there's also something else that is involved there. I talk about that on Wednesday. You can hear it. We're not going to get into it right now. But while we're on the topic of space, the space race is heating up between the space race billionaires who, after they've secured dominance in cyberspace, they want to secure dominance in outer space and in the public space as well. So you have a competition going on between Elon Musk and Bezos' Blue Origin, Elon Musk's SpaceX. They had a contract that was up for sending equipment to the moon. It was a NASA contract to build a spacecraft that would ferry NASA astronauts to and from the surface of the moon as part of the space agency's Artemis program. And Bezos, in spite of the fact that he spent $250 million, you know, what he would have normally earned in half a day to buy the Washington Post. Yeah, that was a smart move. You would think the Washington Post would give him a lot more leverage over what's going on in Washington. But unfortunately for him, he lost the big contract, the JEDI contract, the Joint Enterprise Database or something like that. It was the acronym to do all the Pentagon data. And now he's lost this other contract to Elon Musk, even though they were ahead at the beginning of this. And he was teaming with Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, they came in first in the initial round of contracts. And then Elon Musk came back and lowballed it, half of what Blue Origin was going to call for. So he didn't get the contract, and now he is hopping mad. Elon Musk is also getting competition from his PayPal, Peter Thiel. You know, the two of them created PayPal. People kicked us off last week. So they're former PayPals. Now they're frenemies, I guess, or enemies. I don't know. Peter Thiel is one of these guys that a lot of conservatives think that he's a good guy, just like Elon Musk. That was one thing that Alex and I had a big disagreement about, and that was Elon Musk. I thought he was great. He was just the embodiment of the American ideal, or maybe the Ayn Rand ideal of the rapacious billionaire who pulls himself up by his own bootstraps and goes to the moon, except that the bootstraps are money from the federal government. So I always believed and still do Elon Musk is nothing other than technocrat royalty. He comes from a technocrat family going back to the 1930s. His grandpappy was thrown out of Canada because he tried to overthrow the government with a technocracy. That's why Elon Musk is coming back from South Africa. Stinks to the high heavens, quite frankly. Peter Thiel is another guy who, because he spoke for Trump, he's supposed to be a good guy now too, except that Peter Thiel was co-founder of Palantir. Now, you know, PayPal, I don't like PayPal. They're not involved in this, but Palantir is a geospatial intelligence company that looks at your data. I mean, this is the intelligence that the types of things that we're talking about with social credit score, constant monitoring of biometric data, pre-crime prediction, all this stuff. That's Palantir right there at the beginning, at the center of that. A very evil corporation, and he funded that as well. And so now the two of them are racing with each other to see where they can do brain implants. And, of course, they will sell this, just like DARPA does, to say that this is about helping little ladies across, you know, the across the street. They can talk about how they can use this to help people who are quadriplegics, yes, or people who have ALS, yes. But essentially, just like DARPA, they want to be able to implant memories in your mind and remove them. They talk about it. They say, well, that's just to help soldiers with PTSD. There's something else that's involved there. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with Annie Black. This is what she tweeted out over the weekend. I refuse to wear a mask on the floor of the Nevada State Assembly. Yesterday, I was permanently barred unless I apologize to the body. I will not back down, but I need patriots like you to spread the word. So we're going to talk to Annie when we come back. Stay with us. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family. All right, joining us now is Annie Black. She is a representative in Nevada. And she and another representative, Jill Dickman, decided that they were not going to continue to wear masks after the Nevada House there decided that you're going to have a vaccine passport or you're going to continue to wear a mask. And so they said, well, I'm not going to wear a mask. Well, where's your vaccine passport? Well, that's none of your business. And I'm going to let you, I'm going to let Annie tell you what happened after that happened and where she is right now and what is going on and why she did this. And we'll get kind of a fill in as to what's been going on in Nevada for these 436 days of America held hostage. So joining us now is Annie Black. Thank you for standing up, Assemblywoman Black. Thank you for doing that.
Sure. Thanks for having me, David. I've actually been fighting with the Democrats since the beginning of the legislature way back in February. The entire building was closed to the public. And I just thought that that was ridiculous. People need to be here to be able to see what we're doing and have transparency. So really, I've been a thorn in the Democrat side pretty much this entire session.
Good.
And when the CDC, yeah, all right. They don't like it, but I do. So when the CDC dialed back their guidelines a couple of weeks ago, the legislature continued, like in DC and Congress, continued to have these weird expanded restrictions that seem to appear to be mostly for political theater. And so Assemblywoman Dickman, myself, and all the other legislators decided, you know, hey, the legislature said we don't have to wear masks anymore unless, you know, you're vaccinated or you're supposed to wear them if you're not vaccinated. Anyways, we decided we weren't going to wear masks like everyone else. And for some reason, the legislature decided to single out myself, Assemblywoman Dickman, and Assemblyman Ellison. We have colleagues that we know were never asked if they were vaccinated. Employees, staffers that we know have never been asked if they were vaccinated. So for some reason, they decided to single the three of us out and basically ask us for our papers. And it feels a lot like exactly what people that are anti-vaccine passport are worried about, that
yes,
if you don't fit their little box or you don't go along with what they want you to do, that they're going to single you out and they're going to target you. And that's exactly what's happened to the three of us.
Well, it's coercion, no doubt about it. And they can play semantics. If you coerce somebody enough, it's the same as a mandate. And it's also a violation, I've said myself, that even if I believed the vaccines were 100% safe and 100% effective, I would refuse to get them if it was demanded of me. We have to stand for our individual liberties, and we have to stand for our freedom and dignity and for our right to make health decisions about ourselves. And frankly, I don't know if you mentioned this to them or not, but I'm of the opinion that if your vaccine works, you don't have to worry about whether or not I take it. Just like if your seatbelt works, you don't have to worry about whether or not I'm wearing one. What did they say about that?
Well, they said that I'm selfish and that is not 100%, which they acknowledge, which is an interesting acknowledgement to make, right? Because the vaccine is the end all be all. Mm-hmm. And you know, basically that I'm trying to hurt people and hurt their children because I might be a carrier. Just all kinds of wacky stuff.
Yeah, you're a disease until you prove you're innocent. And you're the selfish one. They're not the selfish one for demanding that you do everything that they dictate to you. So it's an important principle, and I'm really glad that you did it. I saw it was retweeted by Thomas Massie. And of course, he's some of the Republicans in the U.S. Congress who essentially did the same thing. They said, all right, well, a lot of people have been vaccinated. If you think your vaccine works, good for you. We're going to not wear a mask. They've been fined there, but the extent that they went to punish you is very novel, saying that you cannot speak on the floor and you cannot you can't vote either. Talk about that. What does that do to your constituents?
Basically leaves them unrepresented for the rest of this session. So The craziest thing about this, I think, is to me that they never actually asked me if I was vaccinated. So they were judge, jury, and executioner, decided I was guilty, even though they hadn't even proven that I'd broken any of their rules. And so that is the first and foremost thing that I'm extremely concerned about. How do you vote someone in violation of a rule if you don't know that they've actually violated it?
That's right.
And they did. So I guess that's water under the bridge. But what that does is that leaves tens of thousands of people in my district unrepresented for the rest of this session. And that's just, I mean, I think that there's something there that is, you're not supposed to do that. I mean, that there are rules that they can take that ability, but I would bet if we took this to court, there's something to say that you cannot leave people unrepresented. You know, they let Assemblywoman Dickman vote virtually. They didn't give me that option, but I've also been a thorn in their side. So I think that they basically just wanted to shut me up. Mm-hmm. And so now it's one of those things where we have a week left in this session. There's clearly not enough time to take it to court. But I mean, I'm going to fight it as much as I can, because clearly, like you said, they're going to use that against me. They're going to say, well, why don't you just apologize? Why don't you just get vaccinated and then you can represent your people? You're being selfish. You're neglecting them and robbing them of their right to be represented. So then it's my fault, right?
Yeah,
I'm
that's
a bad
right. No, you need to stand strong. You need to refuse to cave into this kind of coercion. And let's understand, the American people of Nevada, have been disenfranchised for 436 days. The rule of law has been suspended. Our basic liberties have been taken away from us by people who, for the most part, are not elected officials. And so this ongoing martial law that is there, we see it in the courts as well. Courts has pretty much been shut down all of last year, and not even having Zoom trials. They just shut down the court. So you don't have any justice there. You don't have any representation, really, in the legislature. But I've got to say that what you're doing, Annie, is extremely important, because you could introduce a bill to change the rules, or you could introduce a bill to get freedom for people. But by standing up to this and refusing to bow to this arbitrary, unsupportable by science rules that they have out there, and to say, I'm not going to have my life held hostage by your arbitrary rules, that is, I think, the most important thing that you could do right now, is to stand up to that precedent that's being set. It's a very dangerous precedent to say that the government at any level can dictate our health care to us, and that they can set up a vaccine passport, and that they can make us non-essential or untouchables or some kind of a lower caste in the society if we don't do what they tell us to do from a health standpoint.
I couldn't agree more. And what I need to, you know, I'm here, I'm at the legislature. I live down south in southern Nevada. I'm in northern Nevada right now, 8+ hours away from my family. I've been here for 4 months. And I'm going to be here until the end of session. What I want to stress to people is that I could vote no on every single bill. And I do vote no a lot because we're a Democrat majority assembly. So I could literally vote no on every single bill from the time they kicked me off the floor till the end. And it would not change a single outcome of
that's
any
right.
of these bills.
That's right.
I'm not saying that that's a reason not to be there. But what I am saying is exactly, I'm agreeing with you that this is a fight that if I don't do it, if I don't fight this, what are they going to do to people in my district or people in this state when they can't go to their job because they won't produce a vaccine record?
That's right.
And if they'll do it to me, and they have, they will do it to you. And so I feel like, you know, it may be to a detriment to me in the future when I run for re-election. But for right now, this is what I feel like I have to do. So
I appreciate the fact that you're not putting your political career first. You're there willing to take the criticism because, as you pointed out, your vote by itself in a Democrat majority where they get to set the rules and they make sure which bills are even going to come up for a vote. There's a limited amount that you can do, but you can stand as an example against this tyranny that demands that we subjugate our bodies to their arbitrary demands. And that is the key issue right now. Everything flows out of that, I believe. Tell us a little bit about what's happened in Nevada over the last year. I know that when they started to open up the casinos slightly, they still had the churches closed. So you had some people go to a casino to hold a worship service. They got a hold away. Tell us a little bit about what's been going on in Las Vegas or just in Nevada in general over the last year.
So our governor, unfortunately, has been following pretty much in the footsteps of Gavin Newsom in California. And so I've been fighting this shutdown for, like you said, over the last year. We were having rallies in Mesquite against it over a year ago. It's just basically killed a ton of our businesses. If I could count all the emails I got that said, hey, I'm a business owner, I'm never going to open my doors again, or I've filed for unemployment and it's been a year and I still haven't gotten my benefits. It would be an astounding number that would make your head spin. Our people have just been put through the ringer, in my opinion, completely unnecessarily, and it's destroyed people's lives. I don't even think that we're going to see the full repercussions of this until maybe a year or two after, because it seems like right now we're being propped up by government subsidies and bailouts and rental moratoriums and mortgage moratoriums. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't even think we've begun to see what this is going to do to our state.
Yeah, the mortgage moratorium that you just mentioned there, put on by the CDC. How does the CDC get any authority? You know, people would say, well, you have to do what they say. Does the CDC have to do what the Constitution says? Do the legislators there, do they have to respect basic fundamental liberties? That's the real issue. How does the CDC get to say we're going to have a moratorium on evictions and things like that? They don't have that authority. So we are operating in a lawless area, as you pointed out when you were talking about what's happening on the state on the floor. You said that it doesn't make any sense to have to wear masks when we have social distancing going on and plexiglass shields. Is that what they have there on the floor?
Yeah, so unfortunately they've taken our beautiful building and they've screwed plexiglass shields onto every surface they can find. they've got we're social distanced. I would say a good majority of the legislature is either vaccinated or had COVID. And so at this point, look, bottom line, I see people like Michelle White. Michelle White is the governor, our governor's right-hand lady. I see her probably weekly at bars around this building without a mask. And this is the person that's responsible for having our entire state shut down. I see Democrats from this building in restaurants and in bars packed in like sardines with no masks on. And then I get in here and they tell me that I'm being unsafe and somehow I don't deserve to vote. And the hypocrisy of the whole thing is it was just too much. I couldn't deal with it anymore.
Yeah, like we see Whitmer, you know, just at a restaurant with 12 people all packed together with their tables, violating her own rules. But, of course, if you're the ruler, if you're the dictator, if the laws come out of your mouth, you can do whatever you want. So what's going on in terms of Vegas? I've seen that it is opening up somewhat. How crowded are the casinos? What are the rules there? How do they compare to, you mentioned, what is happening on the floor of the Nevada House? How does that compare to the casino floor?
Yeah, so I went to a casino the first time since CDC guidelines dialed back to 100%, and the mask thing changed, and it was packed in there. It was a Northern Nevada casino, but it was packed. And I believe the ones down south are all packed as well. Somebody posted on social media a photo of traffic on the Las Vegas Boulevard Strip a couple
Yes.
days ago, and it was bumper to bumper. So thank God for that. I mean, it just says to me that people obviously are willing to take their chances with a virus that has a very low mortality rate. And if they are willing to do that, let's let them do it. Let's let them live their lives,
That's
right? I
right.
mean,
And these people again who think that, the mask is effective. Well, if it's effective, you're protected if you wear it. If you want to wear a mask. We're not telling you you can't. We're just saying you can't tell me I have to wear a mask. We used to say, have an expression that your liberty ends. You can swing your fist as much as you want, but your liberty to swing your fist ends with my face. Well, that's true of the masks now, and it's especially true of the vaccines. You don't get to put something on my face, and you don't get to put something in my body. And if you think that both of these things are effective, then you use them. But don't try to force your medical opinion on me. We have the right of informed consent of a doctor-patient relationship, and that is a paramount issue that we have to stand for. One other thing, let's talk a little bit about what they did with you versus what they did with Representative Dickmann. Tell us a little bit about what's going on. She did not get as harsh a treatment as you did she? I know she was taken off the floor, but they didn't ban her from voting, did they?
No, they did not. So I guess what happened was the two of us went down to the floor at different times. When she went down, she was stopped at the door of the chambers by the sergeant at arms and told that she needed to put a mask on or she couldn't go in the bill or in the room. And so she turned around and went back up to her office. When I went down, they told me that, and I said, "Well, why? Who's telling me that I have to put on a mask and for what reason?" And I was told that the Speaker of the Assembly had told them not to let me in unless I put a mask on. Well, I mean, you're not going to stop me from representing my people. So I said, if the Speaker wants to tell me that, then he can come tell me that himself. And I walked to my desk and I basically just went right past them. Because to me, why are you singling me out? Why are you treating me differently? What proof do you have that I need to wear a mask when everybody else doesn't?
That's
And
right.
if you want to have that conversation, fine. But don't just assume that you know. And so they never did talk to me about it. They never asked me if I was vaccinated. They just let me go to the floor. Well, they didn't let me. I went to the floor. But and then the first order of business on the agenda was for the Assembly Majority Leader to call a point of order and say that I was in violation of Rule 150, which is basically the rule that says we have to abide by the CDC guidelines. So I don't know how you can find someone guilty of 26 people in the assembly, Democrats, all Democrats, found me guilty of violating a rule that they had never even asked me if I violated. So I think it was just a matter of had I turned around when they stopped me and gone back to my office, maybe the situation would have gone differently. But they're still requiring her to wear a mask when she leaves her office to go around the building. I don't
Wow.
know that I would have complied with that.
Yeah,
Like,
that's right.
I don't know.
Yeah, and we have to at some point in time again say, there are some things that have to do with my own personal liberty and freedom. And I don't care what kind of authority you give yourself or what kind of a rule you pass that says that you have authority over me and over my body and over my medical choices. I'm not going to put up with that. And that's why what you're doing is very, very important. It needs to be done by a lot of people in a lot of different areas, but especially by our elected representatives. I think what you're doing, Annie, is the most important thing that you could do right now to stand for our freedom. This has gone on for far too long. This is getting entrenched in, set up in concrete, and we've got to stop this. And I really do appreciate you doing that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you having me on. And we're working on a legal defense fund and fighting this in court because I think it's really important to take it to the next level. Don't let it die
Yes.
here at the end of the session in a week. So,
Tell
if
everybody
any.
where they can find the Legal Defense Fund, where your website is, and so forth, so they can keep up with what's going on. Of course, we'd love to have you back as well, but tell everybody where they can keep up with this, your website, the Legal Defense Fund, and so forth.
Sure. My website is annieblack.net, A-N-N-I-E, black like the color.net. The Legal Defense Fund is getting set up today, and we're going to start working on that. So
they'll find that on your website. I imagine there'll be a link there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, good.
And, you know, I think just one final thing I will say is this whole thing is really scary. I mean, if you see the reaction to people that find out or assume that you're not vaccinated and that you won't wear a mask,
yeah.
The scary thing to me is how upset and how viscerally angry they get at you.
Yes.
And I would be lying if I said I wasn't concerned about retaliation from people that are really upset at me for doing this. So this is a really scary thing that's going on in this country.
Oh yeah. I've seen the comments when I supported you to me. but that's the thing that is disappointing, that is scary about this, is because there is an irrational fear and frenzy that is being ginned up, and it's only going to build if we don't push back against it. So another reason what you're doing is very, very important. We need to have a rational discussion about this, and we need to stand up to this and just refuse, because at some point you got to say, if these people want to indulge in these paranoid fantasies and conspiracy theories, we're not going to indulge them. We're going to say, show me the data, and I'm not going to have you impose this stuff on me. But it is building, and it is going to continue to build. And it's going to be the basis on which they push mandated vaccines, not just saying, well, you got a choice. You can be a prisoner in your own home, or you can take the vaccine, as Biden says. Your choice is simple. They're not going to stay with that. If they can gin up enough fear and anger in the public, they will come after us, and they will use they'll use force to force vaccinate us, not just mandate it as a condition of life, but to actually put it in our arms. And so we've got to stand against this stuff and stand together. Thank you for doing that. Annie Black, and you can find her at annieblack.net, and that's how you can find out about her Legal Defense Fund. Thank you so much for what you're doing, Annie.
Thanks for having me on. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Stay with us. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right, I want to shift gears. I want to talk about self-driving cars. I want to talk about autonomous killing machines and swarms of killer robots. We'll talk about the woke military and the racism that is being pushed by our politicians at every level. First of all, let's begin with the autonomous cars of Elon Musk. We ended just before the interview, we were talking about the competition between Musk and Bezos to get lunar contracts, these lunatics, and we're lunatics if we let them rule over us, and then the competition to get inside of our heads between Musk and Peter Thiel, who has already been getting into people's heads algorithmically with the Palantir, that company. I've done reports on that company in the past. I'm not going to go into detail on it, but a very, very sinister company, even consciously referencing the Lord of the Rings, the Palantir being those crystal balls that were used by kings to communicate with each other and so forth. But then it got hijacked by, if you will, the dark side, Saruman, and was used to basically look inside of them, right? To spy on them, but even to look inside them to read their thoughts. And that's really what this software, this geospatial intelligence software, is set up to do, to read your thoughts, to set up a pre-crime initiative. But when we look at Tesla, one of the things that, there are two things that stick out with Tesla, and that is the heavy government subsidies of these various schemes that he comes up with, like the lunar contract, because it really is a game, right? If he's going to undercut Bezos by 50%, after he gets the contract, he can have a cost overrun. Well, who knew? I mean, how many times have you seen government contracts go into heavy cost overruns? I mean, all you got to do is just lowball this thing. I have some friends in Congress who will, you know, ignore the reality of you being able to perform, which is what they did after Bezos won the first round. And I'm not cheering Bezos either. I think he's a reprehensible critter if ever. All of these billionaires. But anyway, when you look at this, the Tesla company, based on the idea that you're going to have battery-operated electric cars, that's the only form of transportation, of motivation, if you will, that we're to be allowed to have. We can't have electric cars, for example, that run off of hydrogen fuel, because if you did something like that, it would be taxable at the source. But if you have a battery-operated car that can be charged anywhere, then it requires them to have the taxes that are supposedly going to pay to support the roads. They have to have some kind of a black box to track all of your usage and charge you accordingly, which then allows insurance companies to watch everything that you're doing, law enforcement to watch everything that you're doing, the geospatial intelligence people to watch everything you're doing. So you get the idea, right? So we have yet another one of these situations of the abuse of autopilot, which really is vaporware. We've seen this over and over again. And we've had some people who have died as they play with this thing. You had Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple, said, "I love my Tesla, but stay away from autopilot. That thing will kill you." Warning people who had Teslas. But this is a guy who has been pulled over for the third time, sleeping at the wheel of his Tesla. He was going 82 miles an hour. So obviously the autopilot doesn't care about speed limits, I don't think. This was, and I don't think they have, it's Kenosha, Wisconsin. I doubt they have 85 mile an hour speed limits like we do on some roads here in Texas. Anyway, the police officer sees the car, I guess because it was going fast. He pulled up beside it. He saw the guy asleep at the wheel, slumped over. So he put on his lights and he put on his sirens and couldn't get the guy to wake up for 2 miles. Now, I mean, you're talking about, you know, if it's 60 miles an hour, that'd be 2 minutes. So it's a little bit less than 2 minutes that the lights and the sirens are going off before this guy wakes up. He's in a, I wish I could sleep that soundly, especially behind a car's wheel. Once he finally noticed the officer was trying to pull him over, he claimed that he was a little bit tired. Yeah, that's right. Maybe what they should do is maybe they should change the sound of the sirens to an alarm clock. Would that help for the Tesla drivers? Wake up. This is the third time he's been pulled over for sleeping behind the wheel of his Tesla while it's moving. And there's more trouble for Elon Musk as Ford has got a big hit with its electric F-150. 44,000 reservations in just hours after putting it out. That's another reason that Tesla stock is getting a bit shaky. And then there's this in China. It's not just the multiple accidents that have happened in the last couple of weeks in China. One of them, a person who was on autopilot, and you can see that car flying at a very high speed into the back of a truck, and it killed the Tesla quote-unquote driver who was there. Didn't even slow down. Full speed hit it, and it was pretty big differential. Killed him. Then a Tesla that was on autopilot ran over two cops who were investigating an accident, killing one of them. I don't know what the situation is with the other one. But now Tesla vehicles are being banned from Chinese government compounds. Why? And this is interesting. They're concerned about the cameras that are on there. They think they might be spying on the Chinese government officials. Now, whether or not they are, that is the way the Chinese think about it. They're going to be putting that kind of software in. You better believe they're going to be putting that in. If they thought of it, hey, wait a minute, they're spying on us with these cameras. If they thought of that, they're going to think that's a good idea to do it to other people, whether or not that is happening or not. And just think about the fact that you have these CCP officials who can afford Teslas in China. When I was there, and it was about 15 years ago, maybe about 14 years ago, anyway, close to that. When I was there, we had people in the big town. They were rapidly increasing their standard of living, but it's not increased that much. When we went out in the countryside, you still had a lot of people who were essentially living in storage sheds. They would be little tiny, what we would use as a storage shed, little compartmented things with just a garage door. No windows, no other doors, just three concrete walls and a concrete floor and a garage door, like we would use with a storage shed complex. But they were living in them. And you would drive down the road and you would see people that, for ventilation. They would pull up that garage door. And so they're just sitting there in their teeny tiny home with their furniture, maybe watching television or whatever, and living under those conditions. And yet the Communist Party officials are doing well enough that they can afford Teslas. Something's happening here. What is this about communism? I thought it was everybody equal, right? No. Some of the animals on Animal Farm are more equal than others. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the military. We have the Pentagon marching towards artificial intelligence, taking the kill shot. That's the headline from Zero Hedge. I've talked about this before. If you've never read the novel, and it's maybe about 7 or 8 years old, Daniel Suarez, a novel called Kill Decision. Excellent novel to lay out and envision the consequences of these autonomous killing machines operating in swarms. And a little bit of a spoiler alert, but you should read the book regardless. But one of the reasons that this, there's these mysterious attacks that are happening. And thank you. Good. Yeah, Daniel Suarez, Kill Decision. As this mystery is trying to be solved, and they're talking about the technology that's involved, that's very interesting. It turns out that the military-industrial complex is heavily involved in it, because if you have killer drones, it is going to revolutionize and make obsolete all the current existing weapons. That's one of the reasons why this is going to happen. One of them is that you're going to have a killer robot gap, as General Bucky Turgeson would say in Dr. Strangelove. And that's really what we're talking about. This is a Dr. Strangelove moment here. Well, President, we got a killer robot gap. We're going to have to do something about that. So they're gonna rush in that competition. But it's also something the military-industrial complex wants, because it's going to completely reset more than anything else can. This new threat of killer robots making the kill decision is going to reset everything in the defense industry, and it's going to be a big scramble to spend money on this. The demonstrations also reflect a subtle shift in the Pentagon's thinkings about autonomous weapons, as it becomes clear that machines can outperform humans at parsing complex situations or operating at high speed, writes Wired Magazine. Always cheerleading technology at Wired Magazine without any regard to individual liberty. There you go. That's exactly what. Making the kill decision. Ed 209 from RoboCop. Thanks, Travis, for pulling that up. Just as a reminder, that always goes back to that famous, of course, we'd all... Maybe we could send Ed 209 to the Moderna board or something, just as a gift. I don't know. Swarms of robots that will likely force the military to decide if humans need to intervene before a robot engages the enemy. See, we come up with a technology that makes everything else obsolete if you're in on the ground floor. That's going to make you a lot of money, isn't it? Timothy Chung, DARPA program manager in charge of the swarming project. That's right. This is where this stuff is coming from. DARPA. The dark technology that is always pushing the limits, and their very first project at DARPA that they put up for a competition was a self-driving car. And so now they have a swarming project, killer robots. They said last year's exercise was to explore when a human should be involved in the decision-making of autonomous systems. When faced with complex attacks, Chung said the robots could perform a mission better than humans, because people simply aren't quick enough. Now, we've seen this war gamed out on movies going back to the 1980s. Matthew Broderick, War Games, right? Actually, he said, the systems can do better from not having anyone intervene. This all comes down to the reliability of the algorithms. That's right. And so it all comes down, basically, to having plausible deniability. Think about this. They could go on a mass murder spree, some area that they want. They could then blame it on either an algorithm bug. Who knew, right? Or they could blame it on a cyber hack. It wasn't us. The Russians took over and killed everybody in the east side of Chicago. It's plausible deniability. Weapons of the future. Russia's doing this as well. And I've talked in the past to Professor Noel Sharkey, part of a European commission to try to stop killer robots. You know, we have commissions to try to stop the types of things that Fauci was funding, bioweapons and so forth. And it hasn't stopped them. And it's not going to stop these people either. It's too much money, too much power. There's a competition between these different governments. Russia has launched mass production of autonomous, high-tech war robots, says their defense minister, calls it the weapons of the future. And so instead of an ED-209, they have a Uran-9. See, it's all different. It's not the same thing at all, right? Totally different. And then I guess when you look at this, if we're going to let the robots do all the killing and make all the decisions, what do we need people in the military for anyway? I mean, that's what we saw with the video that surfaced from the U.S. military, the woke video, little cartoon video. I run the Patriot Missile Battery, and I'm qualified for that because I have two mommies, and I'm an activist, right? So Ted Cruz made fun of that. He got a lot of people pushing back on him for that, obviously, who love that sort of thing. And Tammy Duckworth, a fellow senator, said, perhaps a U.S. senator shouldn't suggest that the Russian military is better than the American military that protected him from an insurrection that he helped to foment. Now, that's a really dangerous thing right there, first of all. What he's saying is, maybe our military has lost its focus. Do you think? Pretty obviously, right? Not really worried about getting qualified people. We have a Marxist agenda to push, the critical race agenda. And that's really what he was saying. But when she talks about how the American military protected him from an insurrection, I imagine Tammy Duckworth and people of her ilk would prefer to have some robocops protecting them from the insurrection. Perhaps they could make the automatic kill decision as well. I'm sure she would love to unleash the killer robots on the people who are protesting election corruption. The U.S. Army has now shut down the comments about that ridiculous, absurd video because they had so many people criticizing it, so they shut it down. Now, you had YouTube has shut down the video channel, put a strike against it and kept them from posting stuff, of a school district because they had parents who were questioning the science and questioning other things and demanding that the mask be taken off of their kids. Well, YouTube doesn't like that kind of a public discussion. And so they took down the YouTube, or did a strike and suspended the channel for a short period of time to put pressure on the school board to gag and to censor the parents from having any concerns or questions aired about what's happening with the masks. This is why we have to stand up to this stuff. We cannot allow these different actions to be put in. And, of course, a lot of lawmakers, not really that many, frankly, it's about 24 Republicans have expressed alarm about Lieutenant Colonel Matt Lohmeyer, a former instructor, fighter pilot, removed as a commander due to loss of trust and confidence in his ability to lead. Why? Because he wrote a book about the Marxist revolution that's going on. Irresistible Revolution, Marxism's Goal of Conquest and the Unmaking of the American Military. He was talking about the spread of Marxism and of critical race theory. Let's understand, this is not a cancel culture. This is not a culture war. This is a Marxist purge. And that's the you can see right there, that is the military's cartoon reality that they live in. But this is a Marxist purge. I don't like seeing that it's a culture war. It's a competition of different cultures. No, it's not. It's not even a purging of culture. It is a Marxist purge. That's exactly what this is. And he was focused on that. He understood it was Marxism. That's why he had to go. Why he had to be demoted. They cannot have somebody telling you the truth about that. Let's take a quick look at critical race theory, CRT. Used to mean cathode ray tube to me. I think we ought to call it centralized racist tyranny, because that's what's really happening. As you had last week, the mayor, the racist LGBT mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, said, I'm not going to do any interviews with anybody unless if they're white. No whites. She's now being called out from a variety of people. Chicago cops have issued a vote of no confidence, talking about her anti-white racism. Emotions were running high as the union president, the Fraternal Order of Police president, Ken Zanara, said one member grabbed the microphone to suggest a vote of no confidence. All the members present at the meeting, about 150 active and retired police officers, voted for it. Unanimous. His member's newest frustration is the cancellation of an eight-decade-old Chicago tradition, the St. Jude Memorial March, for the second year in a row. The march is an annual May event honoring fallen Chicago police officers and the Gold Star families who lost loved ones in the line of duty. He said it was a slap in the face to every department member, especially the Gold Star families who have paid the ultimate sacrifice and deserve that respect annually, period. No excuses. And then in addition to that, as they started telling people if they tested positive PCR, they had to go home. They couldn't be on the job. So then the people who remained had to start working longer and longer hours. And then it got even worse with the George Floyd riots. And these guys are pulling in 12-hour shifts. He said it's a hard job to start with, a lot of stress, mental toll on the officers. And so they've had, said if you can't get time off, overworking, can't take some time off with your family, they've had two of them commit suicide this year. So they're concerned about that. They're also concerned about the anti-white racism. Tulsi Gabbard also called Lori Lightfoot an abhorrent racist. And let me just say this. The whole idea behind all this Marxist race war that it's putting out is you cannot be racist unless you're white. Why? Because the white people have all the power and the privilege. Well, that clearly is not so. Lori Lightfoot is the mayor. She has power. Therefore, she can be racist, right? As a matter of fact, she used her racism to get power. So Tulsi Gabbard said, Mayor Lightfoot's blatant anti-white racism is abhorrent. I call upon President Biden, Kamala Harris, and other leaders of the country of all races to join me in calling for her resignation. Our leaders must condemn all racism, including anti-white racism. And yet, the Biden administration is engaged in racism and sexism as well. We've talked about the programs that they've used for small businesses, for farmers, and even for restaurants, specifically restaurants. The Restaurant Revitalization Fund would give priority to businesses owned by women and racial minorities, just like the farm bailout and other small business programs. So, Biden is doing the same thing. Racial discrimination has just been shut down by a Texas judge who put an injunction against this. The person who filed the suit, Philip Greer, owns a restaurant. He claims to have lost $100,000 in revenue during the coronavirus pandemic lockdown of Trump this last year. And now Biden doesn't want to give him any money because he's white. Notably, the Congress and the Biden administration have also used gender and racial classification in other aid programs, giving money to black but not to white farmers, as Zero Hedge points out. The evidence submitted by plaintiffs, said the court, indicates that the entire $28.6 billion in the Restaurant Revitalization Fund may be depleted before the plaintiff's application may be considered for relief under the program. So that's why they issued an injunction, the judge did. Meanwhile, in Maryland, $450,000 spent by the largest school district in Maryland for an anti-racist system audit. Social justice classes were taught the slogan, "Make America Great Again," as an example of covert white supremacy. Well, what about the overt racism of Lori Lightfoot? The Mid-Atlantic Equity Consortium conducted the audit. And again, when they talk about equity, don't get that confused with equality. They want to force equality of results based on their intersectionality of identifying people as different groups and ranking the different groups. Some groups are good, some groups are bad. We do not want you to see yourself as an individual. We do not want to treat anybody as an individual. All of you are members of groups. And if we say you're a member of bad groups, if you are white, male, Christian, those are all bad groups. There's nothing that you can do as an individual to redeem yourself. And then, of course, if you're in other groups, that's nothing you can do to make yourself bad. And so they have social justice classes. They said the dominant narratives about race, family, media, and society, coupled with racialized structural arrangements with differential outcomes. That's what they're looking for. They want equality of outcome. So we're going to level that with everybody. Not equality of opportunity. This is full-on communism. It is Marxism. Implicit bias. That is enslaving people from Africa. That has been the economic engine of America, they say. That was also part of the curriculum. They say, what is intersectionality? Students are told that it is defined as exposing one's multiple identities and how they can help to clarify the ways in which a person can be simultaneously experience both privilege and oppression. Again, it's checking the different boxes. When we look at how this is playing out, it is, I love the essay, because we're running out of time here. I love the essay that is on LifeSite News, and it is from a Christian who is half black and half white. And here's what she has to say. She says, this is a cancer. This critical race theory is a cancer. It's not a cure for anything. She says, I'm half black, half white. My melanin doesn't change my worth or my propensity to sin. We live in a culture where we're told that our skin color confers upon us a status that is fixed, assigned by an elite class of humans who call themselves scholars. They want us to see everything through the broken lens of race. I love that. Everything through the broken lens of race, a human construct that has only served to dehumanize throughout history. That's just perfect. That is a quote to remember. Instead, I choose to see through the breakthrough filter of Scripture that opens our eyes to the truth of our identity, the perfect bond of love, our oneness through Christ, the freedom of forgiveness. How can a theory derived from anti-Semites who are virulent racists, hell-bent on abolishing the family and religion, bring healing to the sin of racism? Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels saw Christianity as an impediment to their socialist ideology. How can a godless theory be used as an analytical tool to address issues needing a godly solution? I'm particularly irked by Christians who don't want the struggle of wrestling with solutions, but simply hop aboard the latest bandwagon sponsored by the insanely profitable victimhood industry. And this is the issue, folks. People will tell me, well, you're just too critical. I don't think it's a very Christian thing to be critical like that. Let me tell you, we got into this situation because Christians don't have a backbone. You got to be able to call right from wrong. And this is not about attacking individuals. This is about attacking ideas and actions, holding people accountable, politicians especially, for their actual actions, not for their campaign promises. Talking about people who are influencing others, and that is especially true in the church. Booker T. Washington had this to say about in his book, My Larger Education. He says, there's another class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they're able to make a living out of their troubles, they've grown into a settled habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy, partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances because they don't want to lose their jobs. And this is the case in so many different areas, but this is a case where they are going to create a race war if they get their way. He goes on to say, as someone who is biracial, I am both the oppressed and the oppressor. I was conceived in rape. So am I responsible for my black biological father's heinous act? Of course not. Interestingly, my white father, who chose to adopt and love 10 children of varying beautiful hues that had been abandoned by other men, is branded as part of the white supremacist patriarchy, guilty of every negative outcome of black Americans. He said, my dad recently passed away. His devotion to us proved that it is not color that binds us. It is love. It is love. And he goes on to talk about what is unfortunately happening in some formerly Christian churches as they embrace this in a sense of saying, well, we just want to help people's feelings and we want to, you know, we share your concerns. So it's a great article to read. You can find that at lifesitenews.com. We're out of time. Join us at KHNC. That's 1360KHNC.com for the hour of live radio that begins at the top of the hour. It begins at 11 o'clock Central Time. Thank you for listening. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.